Hello there, and welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Marie Foll, lead of the Key Change Initiative, which is a global network and movement with a wide-ranging remit that works towards what it calls a total restructure of the music industry in reaching full gender equality. I wanted to talk to Marie to take stock and discuss the state of gender representation in the music industry, as well as her and Key Change's ambitions for the year ahead. All that coming up in just one moment. Now, each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time, like this one, and so this podcast is going to be quick. It should take about the same amount of time as George Butler could make 240 burgers. George assembled 8 in 1 minute in 2021. And for absolute clarity, that involved slicing the bun and placing in hamburger patties, lettuce and tomato. Now, talking of building something tasty, Marie and Key Change's work involves trying to build a music industry that is more representative, is more balanced and fairer. So I talked to Marie in depth about the current state of gender representation across a number of areas of the music business, the successes and challenges that Key Change faces, as well as the pushback and the common counter-arguments that she faces when discussing this initiative with people. We also talk about some of the more complex issues, including the infamous and languorous pipeline problem, and her advice on how you, yes you, can make tangible and actionable differences in your own day-to-day work. Let's go and talk to Marie right now. All right, so I'm very happy to welcome Marie Foll, Key Change Lead, to the Focus Podcast. Hi, Marie.
Hey, Joe.
Good to have you here. We're talking to you at the beginning of the year as everyone's looking ahead, and it's a great time to take stock on not only what Key Change is doing, but gender representation in the music industry. Before we get into that, can you give me a little bit of, well, give the listeners a bit of context, who you are, what Key Change does and what you do at Key Change, and how you do that?
Definitely. Thank you very much for having me today. And indeed, it's really interesting to take this moment to reflect on what Key Change does and what we stand for. So Key Change is a movement that represents the underrepresented. We focus particularly on gender equity in the music industry. And so we work on the forefront for a just and equitable future in that specific industry. My job at Key Change has evolved over the last 5 years that I've been working with the movement, from project management, focusing very much on all the admin and the coordination as we work over 12 countries and by now 13, to the job of project lead, which is a mix of strategy and development in terms of where the movement goes next. And this is very much done in collaboration with the rest of the team, and for the rest also making sure that we have enough support, financial support, to be able to continue activities, which consist primarily, when it comes to the funding part, in supporting underrepresented talent. We have a program that supports 74 women and gender expansive artists and professionals in Europe and Canada, and we expanded also to the US. So this is a big part of making it run, making sure that we can support people and support our partner in making the industry more future-proof in that way.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do is, like, as I said, to talk to you about what's been happening in the last year and the state of gender equity in the music industry, and then talk about ambitions in the future. To perhaps put a sort of some numbers on that, or some a bit of understanding, a bit of a framework on it, can you share some statistics about the state of gender equity, gender representation in the various sectors in the music industry for us, please?
Absolutely. This is something that's been really interesting over the last few years, because there are a lot of statistics and it covers by now really a wide range of the music industry. So to name a few, in the countries in which we work, so this is by now 11 countries, including Germany, the UK, France and Sweden in Europe, and then Canada and the US. There are about 84% of members of CMOs who are men, so meaning that there is less than 20% who are women or gender expansive people, when gender expansive are often not even counted at all because the system don't allow it. On another level, so Music Week in the UK shows that the average pay gap at major record label is at 28%. So also in terms of finances, there is a big discrepancy. When we look at some of our music genres, the statistics are also appalling. So there was a research done by Dawn in 2021 that showed that 95% of the works performed by major global orchestras in 27 countries worldwide were composed by men. And so in that study, it also showed that only 1.1% of the work were composed by Black and Asian women, and only 2.4% by Black and Asian men. So the discrepancy is not only on gender, but also in an intersectional framework. When looking at radios, we have similar statistics. So there's been studies done in the UK, quite in-depth by Women in Control, but also in Ireland by the Why Not Her collective. They do an annual radio data report that shows that of the top 20 most played songs on Irish radio, a number of local radio stations had playlists that were by between 95 and 100% dominated by white men. And just on a more recent statistic of 2023, so IQ magazine and teamed up with Roster for a breakdown of Europe's top music festival. This year, they already published the results, and out of all the headliners of the top 50 music festivals in Europe, 90% were men. So that's just a very quick overview of statistics that show that there is a gender equity issue within the music industry. There are also two studies that are very important on a global scale. One is from the Annenberg organization, and this really focuses for part on the US, but also in music in the studio, on the Grammys and so on. And this is published yearly or bi-yearly, and the statistics are really pretty much the same, where there is a very bad representation of women and gender expansive individuals on award shows and so on. The other one is a study that TuneCore and Believe do on a yearly basis, which is called Be the Change. And the last one covered 109 countries and a range of music industry sectors and role. What that study shows is that there is gender discrimination that remains prevalent in the music industry, but there are also opportunities for improvement on that. I will explain a bit more, but there is also a large set of barriers that women and gender expansive individuals face in the music industry. There are three issues that are really coming up in the 2023 report on sexual harassment, ageism, and unequal pay. For the sexual harassment part, 34% of women and 42% of trans and non-binary individuals in the industry had experienced sexual harassment or abuse. And the majority of women and non-binary individuals felt discrimination based on age. And those statistics are around 60%. And then when it comes to the gender pay gap, so while I mentioned a specific one for the UK on major record label already, the Be the Change study put it at around 53% of respondents that felt that cisgender men are paid more than others in the music industry. So all of this dresses a pretty dark picture of where we stand. I think what is important to state, and which was for me quite surprising in this 2023 Be the Change study, is that there is a perception gap where basically less than 60% of artists and industry professionals believe gender discrimination is a major issue in the industry. Women and non-binary individuals are more likely to see the discrimination problem, so 28% and 46% respectively, compared to men, 32% less likely to see that there is a discrimination issue around gender in the music industry. So it's not only that there are issues and we have plenty of data showing that over and over again, it is also that people working in the industry don't necessarily see that there is an issue. So that is very much where the work that we do when we want to talk about representation, when we want to talk about the visibility of women and gender expansive individual on stage, backstage, in boardrooms, in as members of CMOs, this is very much where we place our action, because there is really this need to understand that the music industry is unequal when it comes to gender, and of course other aspect of protected characteristics.
So what you've painted there is a picture where there's an industry that is imbalanced, that is reflected financially and in terms of power and in terms of, you know, also ability to recognize that there is a problem, and that there's an also along with that there's an inability to then have the leverage to action change within internally. It sounds like. So what are you doing as a sort of, I mean, like in a sort of brief outline in terms of what Key Change is doing, but what are you doing in a very specific way to try and move those numbers to a better place?
So with Key Change, we have three main actions at the moment, and those are, so one is to focus on individual with a talent development program that we run to debunk the myth in a way that there is no women and gender expensive people in the music industry. So we make sure to select people who have the potential to develop an international career, who have the stamina for it, also who are interested in that level of development. And with this program, we have by now had around 300 participants worldwide, so in the 13 countries where we operate. Half of them being artists and the other half being a music industry professional, because we really believe that both sides of the industry need to progress. So it's not only something that has to do with artists on stage. It is also making sure that the industry more widely changes on that regard. The second part which we work on is the Key Change Pledge. This is targeting music organizations. We started with music festivals back in 2017, who pledge for 50% representation in their lineup. And what we heard very quickly is that there is a need to develop further and not look only at festival, but really look at the world music ecosystem to be able to implement systemic change. And so by now we have reached over 650 organizations worldwide who have pledged for gender equity, and we are monitoring how they progress on the front of gender equity, but also in other intersectional areas such as race, ethnicity, age, and so on. And the last point on which we work is, again, targeting more of a systemic approach and working on policy recommendations, which targets the European Union, which is one of our main funders, and therefore covers quite a lot of countries in Europe, but then also on the national level and more through decision maker in the music industry themselves, so to provide them with actionable recommendations on what to change and what is needed for the industry to be more sustainable and more diverse. We had a first edition of our manifesto back in 2018, and we are preparing one to be released next year as well.
Right. And I mean, that's a very, like you say, you're trying to implement change in those three distinct areas, which are having very specific tasks and sort of feed into each other. I'm interested in this, what I'm going to call the pipeline issue, which is what I've spoken to people about quite often on the podcast in the past. And not just for any kind of representation, which is, you have a systemic problem where you don't have underrepresented people in positions of authority. And so then they're not necessarily, they don't have the leverage to bring people through to address the balance. And so you also then, so that's a sort of a systemic, as you said, systemic change that you're trying to implement. How is that working, and how does it work in practice? Whether that's talking about, for instance, artists on stage, you know, at festivals. Well, I can imagine one of the pushbacks immediately would be, well, we don't have big enough artists.
We don't have headliners,
right? Which I mean, I don't know the numbers around there, but let's say that there is some truth in that. It does take time to bring people through to get them to that stage, right? So how is that going in that sense? The sort of changing the flow in the pipeline.
That's a very good question, and like we could talk for a very long time around this. I think, so there is a lack of role models, and so this is part of the pipeline issue. It is difficult for a younger generation to picture themselves doing whatever role it is in the industry, be it on stage or be it in any part of the industry, because they don't necessarily see themselves as being empowered to take those roles, to be on stage, to play whatever music instrument it is, to do an international career and tours all over the world, because there are relatively few examples, or there were in any case few examples of such careers in the past. So there have been, in terms of addressing this issue, there have been a lot of mentoring programs and a lot of pairing of artists and innovators, so our professional in the program, for instance, to pair them with senior industry leaders to be able to show like, okay, there is a way, there is more room for people in that way in terms of addressing this issue of role model. We work also in Key Change with ambassadors and with award winners, so where we recognize the role that certain individuals have been playing in the music sector globally to make sure that other people can be inspired by those models, or other people can see that there is room for a very diverse type of leadership, be it on the artistic or the industry side. So I think a lot of it, when it comes to the pipeline, has to do with acknowledging this part that we need more role model, we need to make space for that, and we need to empower people to take those roles. In terms of that pipeline issue, I think when it comes to the industry part, there is a lot of work that can be done in addressing HR policies. And I mean, that's a part that gets way more drier in everything I will say. But in, again, in the Be the Change study, it showed that 30% of women and 30% of underrepresented ethnic group and 74% of transgender individual are more likely to report being passed up for a promotion. So it's also about making sure that all the system in terms of assessing who deserves a promotion, how career development is being implemented in the organization, and how those opportunities for advancement are provided, so in terms of professional training and development opportunity, to make sure that there is an equal access to those opportunities. So talented people who work in your company are not passed over because they don't necessarily feel empowered to claim that promotion. So I think there is a big work to be done there. When it comes then to the artist side, this is something which has been controversial. And again, we can talk more about this, but part of the idea to implement a quota, for instance, or in any case, for festival to pledge that they want to have a 50% representation. When we do that with Key Change, for instance, we are not talking about the headliners. We are talking about all the stages that they have, all the programming they do throughout the festival. The idea with that is to make sure that there is generally more room for the headliners of tomorrow to make sure that this career pipeline can also progress over time. It's not that everything has changed in 2023, but it has a potential to change relatively quickly, actually, with the different award shows, the different festivals, the different really organizations that want to take a change on artists and want to give them room to progress their career in that way. So while there is indeed 90% of headliners in Europe who are male in 2023, there is definitely the possibility to diversify at other levels than the headliner stage and make sure that within a couple of years, especially by implementing very short quotas, very short targets for the festival themselves, to be able to grow those artists and make sure that they are at that level of international recognition within a year or five.
When you do those, when you ask those festivals, for instance, or any kind of event like that, to sign a pledge or to be part of that, obviously you've identified that this kind of change does take time, but it doesn't necessarily need to be as long as you might think. It can be relatively quick. What does that look like in terms of a time span when you say, hey, we want to, let's say a festival says, okay, yes, we want to get to 50-50 representation across stages. Can we have a few years to figure that out? Like, is that baked into the system?
Definitely. So the idea with the pledge is that we know it's not going to be overnight. First of all, for many organizations, they need to start monitoring what they do. They don't necessarily have the data yet. So it's more of a wild guess, or when they look back at the programming they had last year, then they will start noticing certain imbalances, for instance. So the idea for the first report that they do to us is to take stock of where they are, to be able to implement those monitoring framework for themselves. But we do ask an ambition for change within 5 years. It's somewhat bold, but it's also, we have seen that it is actually quite feasible. We did a report of 5 years of the pledge early 2023, and that looks at all the data collected from 2017 to 2022, which was the initial pledge time, so really giving organization 5 years to achieve gender parity as much as possible. And what we saw in that is that overwhelming majority of our pledge signatory had achieved their targets. And it's really about the idea that targeted action works. It is about creating this awareness within the team that work at a festival, be it the programmer specifically, or also more generally, anyone who works within the festival. From the moment this is part of the work that they do, there is awareness being created, there is more question being asked, and this work happens within the organization quite on its own. We do relatively little to change how a festival will program. I mean, this is very much in the hand of the pledge signatory themselves. We are not trying to control what they do at all, but it's really an invitation to think about the way they program, for whom they program, with their audience, to make sure also that their audience remain diverse and makes the festival, for instance, more future-proof by having a more diverse audience, which will continue buying tickets. And with that, we have seen there is a lot of data on this that we have published, for instance, for Germany on music consumption, that younger audience want a more diverse lineup, and therefore festival who provide this diverse lineup have an incentive, a financial incentive actually, to continue diversifying what they do. So it won't be only the music programmer and curators who will be interested in that, but it's also then the financial team, which will see an advantage of keeping this diversity. So by signing the pledge and starting getting into this information and into this flow of monitoring what they do, there is a greater awareness within organization that are created, and then this process of change happens quite organically within the organization. So again, like, we are not trying to force this as much as provide a framework in which monitoring is possible, and just also seeing that progress is made year after year. One thing I would like to add also, on when it comes to festival, we are also not looking at the perfect 50% balance all the time. We know that festival bookings, and I mean venue booking and so on, like, it will be 47% 1 year, 53% the next year. That doesn't really matter, as long as there is this aim and this ambition to book in a diverse way.
Yes, because I mean it's a really hard job to do anyway in the first place. Exactly. Right? So yes, what I'm interested in as well is, you know, like you said, there's obviously a lot of interest around this and a lot of people who are enthusiastic about making these changes, and in every part of the music industry. I am actually interested in this sort of, if you've experienced any pushback and whether that pushback is changing over time, because you've been doing key change now for, I think, seven or eight years, I think. And, you know, what was the pushback like against this as an idea, this concept, 7 years ago? And has it changed? And is there still any pushback now?
I remember when I started in Key Change in 2019, having discussions with festivals and other organizations, especially in French-speaking countries, as I'm French myself, and this was an impossible conversation where people were like, yeah, that's great, but this is not our priority. We want to book great music. I'm like, okay, you know that, like, a lot of different people do great music. Why does it need to be a male artist to do great music? So trying to have this conversation was quite difficult. However, what we have done with Key Change was always to focus on people who want to be part of the movement rather than try to point finger and really celebrate where change is possible, where people want to take this leap and continue engaging with a more sustainable music industry. So by focusing on organizations, on festival at first and then on organization more widely, who want to see a change happening, who are aware of the statistic that I've been mentioning already, we have managed to create a movement pretty quickly of about 200, 300 organizations worldwide who saw the need for Key Change. And this, in turn, has convinced other people in the music industry, because they saw that there was magnitude into what we were doing. So what we have seen also in the meantime, while there were already quite a few organizations worldwide, I mean, a handful of organizations worldwide, who were working specifically on the representation of women in the music industry, such as Women in Music, who exist for over 40 years, I believe. What we've seen in the last 10 years is much more community-based and collective organization of women and gender-expansive individuals who have created their own networks. I mean, She Said So comes to mind, but also Female Pressure when it comes to electronic music, and then per country as well. There are quite a few which have emerged in the last 5 years. And this also allows for further realization country by country, region by region, that there are issues to be tackled and people come more together to be able to find support, find role models, find ideas on how to change the industry. And so through our partnership in those 13 countries, we are quite well connected with different initiatives like that. So on the pushbacks that still exist to this day, there are a few that we keep encountering, one of which being on the assumption that there are natural differences between genders, and in that regard that men are more likely to be in a band, to produce music, to record music, than women would be, and that this starts already during teenage years, and this is a socialization way for men to be together. While this is understood to be a natural phenomenon, this is very much a cultural one. This is because, again, of the lack of role models. This is because women are not necessarily encouraged to form bands, pick up a guitar, and play together. So there is that pushback specifically on gender, on the fact that men are more inclined to form bands. This is a very interesting one to debunk with a lot of cultural practices and sociological practices. One that is related to this and happens a bit later in the careers is the topic of parenthood, where basically a lot of people assume that women who are trained in the music industry and in conservatorium and so on drop out of the music industry in the late 20s, early 30s, which would correspond to the time that they start having a family. When we hear that one, while it is true that the music industry is not helping parents generally, it's not only women who have babies, let's put it very frankly, there is a lot that can be done in terms of making the workplace more accessible to parents. While it is true, again, that we work primarily in the nightlife, that this is quite different than a lot of other industry in that respect, there are a lot of ways for parents to be part of the industry. And what we see is also that a lot of men have children and are part of the industry. So the problem is not so much on gender, but much more on how do we make sure that women or people who have children generally can come back to the industry and find a way to continue finding the support that they need, or go also in other positions in the industry if they wish to do so. That's one that keeps on coming, that's never going away in terms of pushback arguments. When it comes to other aspects, so one is also that the pledge like we have, and especially pledges where quotas are much more prominent, are discriminatory towards men and especially cis men. So this perspective often stems from a misunderstanding of the purpose behind diversity initiatives and quotas, which aim to rectify historical imbalances and promote equal opportunities for all. So it's not in taking something away from someone, but making sure to rebalance a system that is flooded to start with. And this links also to where we still, not necessarily as key change, but I think within the music industry more generally, like there is a pushback on power structures more globally, in the sense that we are trying to take something away from people in power. We are trying to diminish people who have it all. And this is not the case. Like, we want to increase the number of opportunities. We want to make sure that there is more diversity. It's not about asking someone to step down from being a CEO, not at all. It is about making sure that there is systemic change. It is about making sure that there is opportunities for all talented people who are in the industry, and not forcing people to move away of the industry because there is no room for them. But again, like, really creating that room for everyone to be part of a flourishing industry, and not discarding talent who might have the potential to make something absolutely brilliant that we just set aside because it doesn't fit the power structure that we have at the moment. So this is one that takes a lot of care, and where we need more men as ally also to understand that this is not about replacing them. It is not about taking something away from someone. It is really about providing equal opportunities and making sure that how we develop the industry's future is more sustainable, more diverse, and more encompassing of the different talent that there is.
Yeah. And in terms of then actions, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening who are keen to take part in this or be part of this movement or the change. And of course, on the KeyChange website and the events you run, there's a lot of resources and advice and strategies and things. I'll share some links to that for them to have a look at. But, you know, as you say, it's a big industry, but often talking about big organizations where there's a lot of people with very entrenched power structures, or organizations where perhaps they have a small nucleus team that then expands a lot over a certain part of the year around an event and then closes down again. And so there's a lack of continuity. And it might feel a bit overwhelming to sort of, either because you don't have the power to make changes, or you're perhaps not part of a continual assessment or a continual process. So if they're an employee or working in a large organization, how do you advise people to make positive changes and start to do it, even if they perhaps don't feel like they have the leverage to make the change?
I think a lot of it has to do with individuals within companies. This is usually where it starts off. Even to sign the pledge, like, it takes one person who believes in the need for change to really gather the wider organization around them, being a small organization or a big one. So what I would want to say to everyone who's listening is very much like, you can do a lot of things just by knowing about the issue and realizing where you stand in all of this, what is the potential that you can do. So with that, first step can be to update your gender knowledge. So there is a lot of possibilities to listen to podcasts like this one, but also to read up on why women and gender expansive people face barriers in the music industry and get to work in the music business from a working perspective. So we have statistics that we publish every Friday on KeyChange socials, where we highlight one number to just gain some awareness and start reading about something, to be able to understand, like, okay, there is a problem into gender pay gap, but also on representation in live music, or something more specific for Spain or for other countries. So this is just to be able to understand, like, okay, there is a problem. Oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, wow, that's much broader than the first issue that I spotted. And this way, if you work for a booking agency, if you work for a festival, if you work for, I don't know, like, really any, even training organization and music education, like, you will start seeing more and more where the problem lies around you. And this is the first realization to just understand, like, okay, this is within your reach to be able to implement change. For people who run their company, I think also considering your HR and DEI policies, so on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the human resources, so hiring practices and so on. There is a lot of resources, and I'm happy to share more on that, but there are a lot of resources on how to start recruiting in a different way, how to eliminate your bias when you hire people, because you are more tempted to just go with a friend because it's easier. And I mean, I'm the first to have done this, or to have asked that when I was freelancing, like, on account of, okay, just, hey, you know me, you know who my worth, so therefore you're going to work with me. While it's a way to do it, it's also good to make sure that your applicant pool is wider, to be sure that you're not missing out on the talent that you need. So trying to make that, and trying to put that in the contract you sign with subcontractors as well, to make sure that your security company, if you run an event or all those kind of things, that they are trained on sexual harassment issues, that they are trained on racist bias, that they are trained on those different aspects that will eventually also impact the gender equity balance, on how safe people feel that they are in their workplace. So all of this can be implemented. It takes a tiny bit of time to formulate those policies if you don't have them yet, but there are a lot of organizations who are happy to share all of this with you for free and help you along the way to make that happen within your organization. Again, like, this is very much linked to what we suggest for people to sign the pledge. So if you want, you can also sign the pledge. We can help you monitor all of this over time to be sure, like, that this is a way for you to progress. And this starts again with one individual. One very easy point for everyone to start with is to balance your music consumption. When we talk about pipelines, when we talk about who gets booked, when we talk about who gets represented, it's usually people who have an audience. So if you want to see that change, and especially on the artistic side, make sure to check what you're listening to. Make sure to know, like, okay, there are statistics in a lot of DSPs, but it can be also just looking and taking a hard look at what you listen to. And if that's too much, you can also just start thinking, it's probably not really super diverse. Where can I find more new talent that are more diverse than what I listen to? So there are some online radio stations that are dedicated to women and gender expansive individual. I know one specifically in France, which is called Radio Tempête, and they have an international programming. But then just looking at who they play, it can help you just make sure to diversify a bit what you listen to. We have playlists ourselves, but this is a case also of many other gender in music programs. So trying to look at that, and then trying to look at the festivals and the concert houses that have signed the Key Change Pledge, more than likely you will find also more talented artists fitting your music genre that might be something you want to listen to. And this in turn gives money to women and gender expansive artists who then can develop their careers and expand to the headliner issue we mentioned in terms of the pipeline issue.
So that's the bottom of the pyramid of that whole sort of pathway to the top. How do people react to that? Because I'm interested, you know, when you talk about listening to music on a very personal individual level, obviously some people who are very interested in this issue will be, and perhaps people who are also very interested in listening to new music, like you say, that you can consider your platforms for listening to new music, the way you're discovering and where there's a better balance. But also, listening to music is a very sort of intimate and personal thing that has been built over decades of experience, isn't it? So that's that. Do you find that people say, oh, well, you know, yeah, I'm interested, but actually I want to listen to the music I like, and it happens to be a lot of men there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. At the same time, there are many different ways to approach it, and I think that's where music programmers are absolutely amazing at doing that. I mean, be it at festival or radio or so on. What I find fascinating is when you manage to have a playlist which is balanced and people don't notice it because the music is just brilliant. And it's just this kind of recommendation on, okay, oh, you like this artist. I know that you will love that one, who happens to be also more diverse. But that's not the main focus of the conversation. So I do that also with, there is a festival I absolutely love, which hasn't even signed the pledge, very much in the music genre I listen to. And I know that it programs gender balance because it's just in their DNA, and it's like it's something they do without thinking about it, and they're very happy to do so. It's a festival in the Netherlands, and it's really brilliant because like I can expand just the pool of artists I love to listen to on a very, very private level, which are not necessarily the main artists that I see at every other festival, or even that are programmed in a automated playlist from a DSP, from the music genre I'm listening to. But this festival, for instance, is just programming much more diverse, and I'm discovering so many bands which really fits the music genre I love. So I think there is really a great way to keep it very intimate, and this is what we do also when recommending, working with festival and recommending artists. We are not just offering a large database. I mean, this is possible. There are a lot of databases that exist where you can find women and gender expansive artists and professional also on them. I mean, Female Pressure has a massive database of all electronic music artists worldwide, which is brilliant, but it doesn't mean you will find exactly the one that you want. And I think there comes the human factor, where when we do a selection, for instance, and we work with festivals, be it Mutech, again, on electronic music, and that's just the one that comes to mind, but Oslo World on a much more diverse pool, for instance, they will be looking very specifically at a music genre that they want to program, at a certain aesthetic they know that their audience is interested in, and then program something that relates to that. So I think this is the way to keep it intimate and personal, and to fit still your music genre and what resonates with you, is really to look at certain festival that you know their programming is really interesting, and then try to like fits your liking.
It's complex, isn't it? Because as music consumers, we rely on tastemakers, whether they're radio DJs or club DJs or festival programmers, to guide us, because there is such a large pool of music out there. And so I guess that's an example of how, if you can get equity in those tastemakers, then they are more likely to put the representation in that you're aiming for and perhaps a lot of people want.
If I can add on that, I had an absolutely amazing conversation once, and it's a few years back, but especially with festivals, so with a network of festivals, with a pledge signatory, and they wanted more of their members to get acquainted with what we do and start programming more diversely. And one of the festivals in the room happened to have signed the pledge as well, and was sharing on how complex it had been for the programmer at first, on a kind of, seriously, don't want to do that. This is just a like, it's a pain. It's not who I program and so on. And they switched it around and they were like, you know what? I'm there also to discover the other artists who are not being booked because I want to make my festival special. I want to really curate something that makes sense to my audience. And I want to be the festival they go to for that. Like, really, this unique artwork in itself of the programming. And like, by forcing myself as a programmer, so as a curator, a programmer and so on, by forcing myself to just go beyond the stuff I already know, I'm programming in a way that makes me more excited about my job. So there was this ripple effect. And then like all the other festival, I wasn't the one saying that, the guy was saying that and being like, that's actually a great way for me to just keep my curiosity alive and push myself beyond what I already know, because what I already know is not going to book. I mean, it's not going to bring my audience on the long term or really make me relevant. So there was this incentive, but also like this very genuine music lover curiosity on, holy shit, I want to listen to that. And I want to be curious on the next stuff. So that was really, a really great way to look at it on a kind of, it's about this curiosity of discovering this new band that you will absolutely love. And that if you're on a program and like that your audience will love, but it's really about taking that chance. And because of this lack of gender diversity, there is a pool of untapped talents, which is brilliant and just needs this kind of access on playlists and radios and festivals.
Okay. Well, let's sort of look ahead perhaps then to 2024. What are you, as an organization, what are you looking for in terms of milestones that you hope to hit this year?
We have lots of ambition, and that's probably, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse. We launched in the US back in 2023, so last year. We aim to continue and improving and developing this program further in the US and making sure to increase the reach of cities we work with, because for now it's been only in LA, Nashville and New York, and we are looking at other music hubs in the US to continue including them there. What we will continue doing is also to reopen our talent development program in Europe and Canada, because we have hit a pause for the beginning of this year, but this is something that we intend to relaunch, and there is a high demand, and this is something we want to do in a more focused, more condensed and more international way over probably a shorter period of time, so not 1 year, but probably 6-7 months. And this means continuing to increase the talent pool we work with to make sure that there is representation across the board, making sure also that we become a more representative organization ourselves. So the leadership that we have within Key Change is not necessarily represented with the team we work with. So this is something we aim to improve on. And I mean, that seems small in the grand scheme of everything, but that's definitely something where we're like, okay, this, we need more voices, we need more diversity to be able to lead that movement. On a global scale, we intend to put our pledge action plan in motion. We released it in 2023 with four main areas of work: beyond gender, urgent action, global community, and education and activism. This means in very short terms that we work in a much more intersectional way, that we don't focus solely on gender, but at the intersection of gender and different characteristics, as we saw in the stats that I mentioned at the beginning. So ageism is an issue, but also racial and ethnic representation as well. And this becomes even worse when you start interlinking those different areas. So this is something that we really want to push forward toward our existing pledge signatories, but also toward the music industry in general, and make sure that there are more tools and more support, more best practices being highlighted, to be able to understand how that can change and how we can systemically approach that issue on a wider spectrum. So this is part also of education and activism, making sure that we continue providing those tools and resources. That all seems very vague and very broad, but this is basically, so we've crossed the milestone of over 600 pledge signatory in 2023. We want to continue supporting those 600 organizations, but also ideally, not sure that the 1,000th milestone is going to be in 2024, but who knows, that might definitely be something that we want to
aim high.
Move forward. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And also diversifying more the type of organization we've signed the pledge, again, we have a majority of festivals because this is very obvious for them by now. But as I said, like CMOs are definitely organization where a lot of work can be done, where we have really great partners with SACEM in France, but also with PRS for Music for many years, with GEMA, with Tim, with Steph. I mean, like I can name a whole bunch. They all know about us, they work with us, they support us, but there is really something that can be done further with their constituency and their members. So this is something we look forward to engage with. And on a much more, please take your agendas and save the dates for the coming months. So we are going to be working toward International Women's Day on the 8th of March and Women's History Month throughout March to highlight talents and issues that we have been talking about for a long time. I know some our alumni are planning some activities in their own countries, so including in Spain, and we will be announcing all of this in the coming weeks for sure through our social media. We are looking also at live concerts and radio programming during the month of March. So really to be sure to continue having this conversation, and anyone who is interested to reach out and be part of this conversation, please don't hesitate to send me an email on that. And we will also have a very large presence at Tallinn Music Week in the first week of April. It's both to celebrate the achievement of what we've done over the last 7 years, but also to present our new manifesto. So again, like a list of recommendation on where the industry can take action directly, where policymakers can support those actions, where funders, be it public or private, can really set things in motion. So this is really the focus of our work in the coming months, to really deliver that at Tallinn Music Week and make sure to lead the way toward a sustainable, diverse and future-proof music industry.
All right, so plenty happening, and I will put some links below the podcast to a number of those things, and people can check them out and get involved as they see fit. So perhaps what we can do is check in, do another podcast in let's say a year or so, and we can see how those things have gone and see if you hit the 1,000 member.
That would be lovely,
Maria, which would be good, wouldn't it? Now, one final thing before we go, we've talked a lot about everything around music, and we've sort of touched on music, but let's talk about music specifically. Just to get a bit of a snapshot of who you are as a person, if you could only listen to one piece of music or maybe one album, what would it be?
Right now, one that resonates a lot with me is Kim Ortol, with an artist we had in the program back in 2020, I think, with a Canadian artist, queer Filipino, non-binary, which seriously I had no idea about, but I was just listening to their music, and is very moving and very, it's a mix of spoken words, but also, yeah, sort of hip hop-ish. And it's also one of the first concert I saw back after the pandemic, where we were asked to stay seated and not move. And this was absolutely impossible to during the show. So that was really also like just the memory of the live music, but also just the engagement in the text, how I can see myself in the lyrics and so on. Like this is really one that I will.
Right. That's very all-encompassing. It's emotional, memories, everything all
exactly.
in one. You're getting value for money out of that one. Yeah. Good. I appreciate that. All right. Marie, thanks ever so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. So that's it. An enormous thank you to Marie for joining us. I've put links to various Key Change initiatives below the podcast. And please do share this podcast on with someone else who you think will find it useful. If you want to get in touch with me, I would love to hear from you. You can email me on joe@musically.com. That's joe, J-O-E, @musically.com. We also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from across Music Ally's broad range of services. So sign up and impress your friends. Links are in the description as ever. And that's it. Thank you for listening and joining me. I've been Joe Sparrow. You have been you. And until next time, farewell.